Welcome to Speaking of Strong Style, where we discuss the news, issues, and events surrounding New Japan Pro Wrestling. I'm Stephen Conway. I'm a contributor to the Fight Game Media Network, and I am going solo this week. Jeremy will be back very soon, but I am going to be handling things here today. Alone on the show, we'll be talking about the recent title matches in Hiroshima, plenty to discuss this week. We'll also be taking a look at Satsuma no Kuni show, two title matches there. We will preview Wrestling Dontaku, a two-night event starting tomorrow and continuing Saturday. We have All Together coming up, and we'll also take a look at the Best of the Super Junior Tournament blocks, which have been announced since our last show here, and what they can tell us about the top contenders. And then we'll get into some injury news, because unfortunately, there's been quite a bit of that. So with that in mind, it's been one of these weeks where you're kind of waiting for Dontaku, but they sprinkled in some interesting things in the meantime. We had a couple of interesting matches, elimination match with the LIJ team taking on Jake Lee and the War Dogs. That was interesting in Hiroshima and had a pretty happy ending there that we're going to talk about for Naito and crew. There was a King of Pro Wrestling match that was, we'll call, unique. How about that? Well, it certainly was unique. There hasn't been anything like this one before. And we'll discuss what it means for the King of Pro Wrestling title going forward. Satsuma no Kuni, that was the night of the junior heavyweights. We saw the junior heavyweight title on the line as well as the tag team titles on the line. And let's just get right into that show in Hiroshima. That was back on Saturday the 27th. All these things kind of feed into one another. So we'll begin with that. And in Hiroshima, it began with a pretty decent card. And get my notes back up here to make sure I don't miss anything. Had 2,145 fans. And that's a big crowd for Hiroshima. It was bigger than the crowd for the G1 tournament last year in the same building. It was in the Sun Plaza Hall in Hiroshima. Biggest since the G1 back in 2019. And that was a real hot period for the company, 2019. And so a healthy crowd. And again, it just goes to show that Tetsuya Naito can move the needle. He was in the main event here and the focal point of a lot of this. So it started off with a Frontier Zone match. That was Oleg Bolton and Toriano. They wrestled Hanzo and Ray Paloma. Now, Ray Paloma is mostly a comedy guy, and he's also from the area. He pretty much did the end of the match with his pants around his ankles. So a bit of a Taguchi tribute in some ways right there. He had his pants taken down over the course of wrestling, and he stumbled around the ring and tried to run and do spots while his tights were around his ankles wearing a red thong. So that was what you got out of Ray Paloma. It was doing a bit of a gimmick there. And Hanzo, his tag team partner, has been in the Super Junior tournament before in 1997. So pretty older guy there, but both locals, so they got into the Frontier Zone on this one. What I thought was interesting about this is that Bolton did not sell at all for either one of them. Toriano did all the selling, such as it was in this one. It wasn't long, but Bolton got the win on Paloma with the kamikaze, and again, didn't sell a bit. They are really working hard to make Bolton look like a stud there. So by having him just bulldoze through these guys, that was the message sent there. Colin, you're watching live. Thank you. I appreciate that. Glad you're here. Glad I have someone to talk to at least. Now there's a few people watching. Oh, happy to see that. All right. Glad everybody is here live. And if you're listening on the podcast later, much appreciated. Glad that you have joined us for this. So after that, there were a bunch of preview tags. Nothing really to speak of there. Bishamon had a rough week. They lost in just about everyone they had, trying to build up Chase Owens and Kenta again as the challengers for the IWGP Tag Team Championship. Chase got a belt shot in on Tiger Mask to win that one. They had a post-match beatdown on Bishamon to set up that one coming up at Dontaku. And then there were just some other things. United Empire against TMDK. You had the Hantai group, Desperado, Shota, Ishii, beating the House of Torture. none of these were particularly memorable or had plot twists to them. It was just a matter of just getting the guys on the card and previewing matches that we'll be seeing later. The next thing, though, was an NJPW Strong Openweight Tag Team title match, and that featured TMDK against the Gorillas of Destiny. Now, these are the former champions, El Fantasmo and Hikuleo. This was a natural title match to do for TMDK. TMDK won the championships in a four-way match, so the four tag teams involved, and that was back at Windy City Riot. So they had Fred Rosser and Filthy Tom Lawler as one team. The West Coast Wrecking Crew was another team. TMDK with the champions Phantasmo and Hikuleo. TMDK beat Tom Lawler and Fred Rosser. That was the finish. So the champions were not involved in the finish. TMDK, then the obvious thing to do was go ahead and give that title match to the former champions, have it one-on-one finally. Very simple, easy story to tell right there that makes a lot of sense. This was a good match. Everyone hit their stuff pretty crisp in this one. And the crowd was also into most of the things on the card. It came down to a typical New Japan structure, though, with guys hitting moves, big moves on each other down the stretch. Mikey Nichols ended up rolling up Hikuleo as he gave Shane Haste a choke slam to win. Nichols rolled up Hikuleo and got the victory that way. An interesting bit that happened after that is Hikuleo kind of lost his mind after that. He kept attacking the TMDK members after the match, going after him outside the ring, stomping on him, certainly no handshake. And in post-match comments afterwards, he was very angry, screaming, cursing, and ELP had to try to calm him down. There's been a lot of conjecture about Hikuleo's future in New Japan right now, especially after what we saw with Tama Tonga in WWE, where he comes into the company and goes right into the bloodline angle, which is still, even with Roman Reigns taking some time away, one of the biggest angles in the entire business. Of course, Hikuleo is a natural guy to have if you want Tama Tonga to have a tag team partner, or, you know, it's a natural fit. He's a big guy. He can work pretty well. He's learning how to talk, and he's a talent. And so the question is he going to be staying with New Japan a whole lot longer? This could be the seeds of him changing a little bit, or maybe he just decided that in this situation, my character would be pissed. That's fine. They have been doing the whole taking pictures with the kids thing. And so seeing him just kind of fly off the handle and attack somebody kind of after the bell and have a bad attitude about it afterwards, to the point that El Fantasmo is saying, "Hey, dude, calm down. It's going to be okay. We're going to get him." That seemed interesting. It did not seem like it was something just a small bit. It seemed like maybe they're moving in a different direction with Hikuleo. We'll see. And I think Dantaku is going to tell us a little bit about what might be next for him. After that, we had the most unusual match of the night, the NJPW King of Pro Wrestling Provisional Championship. This was the Great Okan, the champion, taking on Yuya Uemura in the Rural Revitalization match. So this one had three components to it, and they were started off with a tire carrying challenge. So the first was a match where you had to carry four Mazda tires to the ring. Mazda tires are, of course, part of the fabric of that area, the Mazda car factories in Hiroshima or in that area. So they each had a traffic cone in their corners. So the wrestlers had to carry four car tires to the ring and stack them on their orange traffic cone. It wasn't just a race, though. I was worried that this is going to be like a relay race or something like that. Instead, they worked it as a wrestling match where you had to do this in addition to wrestling each other. So instead of falls, it was the tires on the cone. They worked this because you could remove your opponent's tires. So what they could do is tease someone getting two tires, three tires on their cone, but then having the opponent get a move in on them and take away those, you know, so you guys would go up to three and then down to one. They go to two and then get hit from behind. They used tires as weapons. They sabotaged one another, and they battled, of course, until there were three tires on each of these cones. At that point, Okan had the fourth tire in his hands, but Uemura rolled him up, then rolled through that roll-up so that he kind of came out toward his own cone on top of Okan, grabbed Okan's tire, just had to roll over to his own cone, stacked it to win. Kind of a clever finish, actually. It wasn't so bad. So that gave Uemura the 1-0 lead in the stipulations. After that, a Hiroshima lemon-eating contest. Because, of course, right? The last time we saw one of these rural revitalization ones, of course, they ended up eating gyoza. It was Tangaloa and Great Okan having a gyoza eating contest. This time, it's a lemon. And they had to eat it, rind and all. And this time, once again, the iron stomach of Great Okan coming through for him. He won the gyoza eating contest, and he managed to chow down on the lemon and fight his way through the sourness to get the victory there, thus tying the match 1-1. That meant we came down to a table match. Tables don't have anything in particular to do with Hiroshima. You just have to have something for the third fall. Pretty standard stuff with all the table teases. They set one up, try to get their opponent into it. Didn't work. They get reversed. Oh, we got to put on the brakes. Almost went into my own table. All the usual things. And it all ended with Uemura hitting a deadbolt suplex on Okan, crashing through a table that had been set up in the corner. And that did it. So in the end there, it was Yuya Uemura, the new King of Pro Wrestling champion. So what that means is we get to see what kind of stamp Yuya Uemura will put on this title. Throughout the history of this belt, whoever has it, of course, sets the stipulations, and the opponent also, the challenger, presents their stipulations. Usually these are presented in such a way that you kind of know which one the company wants to do. They kind of make one a lot more enticing than the other. Like for this one, it was going to be something like a catch wrestling match. With, you know, no strikes and no big, you know, basically mat wrestling. It was Uemura's. Sounded like they wanted the rural revitalization vote to go Great Okan's way in this. So they've done that before where one guy will present some stipulations that are much more appealing than the others. So they kind of tank it without tanking it, the voting. Voting goes on Twitter usually, or X or whatever you want to call that thing. In the past, we have seen it be a reflection of the person who is the champion. So when it was Henare and Shingo Takagi fighting over this thing, all of those stipulations were about warrior spirit. It was going to be something very, very difficult, something, a trial by fire to go through. You were going to have to fight for your life to get through this and get that King of Pro Wrestling title. When Yano was handling the KOPW title, they were mostly silly stipulations, things you could do comedy with. When it was, for instance, you know, Okan, he did this rural revitalization. Taichi and Shingo brought in some scorekeeping things. So the idea is that most pin attempts win, or the most counts. So if you cover somebody, you get a 2 count, those points accumulate, just finding ways to keep score. And that was how they were competitive about it. And like I said, we have those wars between Henare and Shingo. So it's going to be interesting to see what Uemura does with this. And I don't know what kind of personality he's going to bring to this thing. We know he's a very talented wrestler. There's no question about that. It's just a matter of what is he personality-wise? Like, you know, he has a nickname that doesn't really match anything that he does. You know, he's not really fiery, although they try to kind of put that forth. He's been, you know, he's had his head shaved in the past, hair's growing back out now. He's a decent-looking guy. No one doubts that necessarily, but we don't know what Uemura is like. We just don't know what his personality is like. That might come out here in some of the ideas he has for this KOPW title. He does not have an apparent challenger for it right off the bat. He just kind of walked out with it there. The other thing about that, Sonata is hurt. So, of course, Uemura is part of Just Five Guys. Sonata is hurt and is out for a while. He's going to miss all of this weekend. He's not at Dontaku. He's not at All Together. Basically replaced by Taichi for the most part. And Taichi came off really as a Just Five Guys leader in the post-match comments the last week. And he was very magnanimous toward Uemura, saying, congratulations on winning your championship. We're all behind Doki. We'll have your back against House of Torture in his match against Sho. He came off as a leader, which is something that Sanada never really did. He was the leader because, of course, he was the world heavyweight champion. Well, he was in active for the, for a lot of that run there. Sanada kind of formed Just Five Guys and then shortly after won the title or joined it. I guess they were just four guys and then they were just five guys once Sanada won it. But he kind of rose to the top just by being the IWGP champion. But he never really did a whole lot as a leader of that group. He didn't come off much as a leader of the group. Taichi seemed to be putting off leader vibes right here. And we have several factions in New Japan that are shaky on leadership, or at least have people that the fans aren't necessarily 100% sold on yet as leaders. Just Five Guys might be one of those where, is Taichi the leader? He might be. Sanada is probably a better technical wrestler than Taichi. I feel pretty comfortable saying that. Taichi has more charisma. And Taichi, when in with the right opponent, can be damn good. Is he an IWGP World Heavyweight Champion? That's a bit of a tougher call. Is Taichi at that level? Never open weight, global? None of those bother me, the idea of Taichi being there. Sanada was a failure as the IWGP champ. And Taichi doesn't quite feel like he's on that level either. But we've lost a lot of guys that were on that level, and we're in the process of establishing new ones. So we'll have to see. You know, the Emperor is up there in age. He's in his mid-40s, and they don't have forever on this. So this could be a time for him to rise toward the head of that table. We have no idea what Sanada's injury is or how long he's going to be out at this point. Certainly nothing official from NJPW as of yet. But I thought it was interesting that Taichi came off as the elder statesman there, not just in age, but in demeanor when he's talking about his group of guys there. So moving on to the main event in Hiroshima, we had an elimination match, 10-man elimination match. And this was one that featured Jake Lee from NOAH, who, of course, attacked Tetsuya Naito at Korakuen Hall, surprising many people, including me. I did not know Jake was coming. And he joined up with the War Dogs here. So this was a match that featured the whole fan family of LIJ. So it was Bushi, Hiromu Takahashi, Shingo Takagi, Tetsuya Naito, and Yota Tsuji. And they took on Clark Connors, David Finlay, Drilla Maloney, Gabe Kidd, and Jake Lee. So Jake Lee in storyline replaced Ghetto. David Finlay said to Ghetto, "You're sitting this one out. We're putting Jake Lee in." Of course, Ghetto is the New Japan booker, so it was his idea all along. And made the match better, of course. You know, Ghetto's up there in age. Jake Lee is has the hot thing going with Naito right now, so it worked. We also got a look at Sly Lee. Sly Lee is the mascot of the Hiroshima Carp baseball team. That's one of the major league teams there in Japan. And we've talked about it before. Hiroshima is the second hometown to Tetsuya Naito. He's from Tokyo, but the Hiroshima Carp have adopted LIJ and vice versa. Sometimes they will play Naito's music during games when they need a rally. The guys have thrown out the first pitch at Carp games. Members of the Hiroshima Carp have been seen wearing LIJ shirts under their jerseys, you know, so everyone's kind of copacetic here. And Naito has really taken to that. And of course, Naito's a huge baseball fan too. So the mascot Sly Lee from the Hiroshima Carp came out to ringside with LIJ, and the crowd really popped for this. Like I said, this crowd was really into this, very much into Naito, and they understood that this was like a home game for LIJ. During the match, Gabe Kidd and Shingo Takagi worked very hard, as you would imagine. They ended up eliminating each other, sending themselves over the top rope in their fight. Of course, neither one of them is going to back down from the other. That's the entire story they're telling as they go into the match at Dontaku. Bushi had a strong match. He managed to maneuver Drilla Maloney over the top rope. Then he pinned Clark Connors with a Sayori Anu type of a roll-up. This is a roll-up that Anu has been doing in Stardom, where it's a backslide, but then she floats over and somehow manages to get her legs on top of the ankles of the other guy to kind of pin them down. So imagine a backslide, except the person giving the backslide actually bends all the way over backwards. And Bushi's managed to do it. it looks a little smoother when Andre does it. She's a little more flexible than Bushi, but he got it and he pinned Connors with it. So we are seeing a little bit of a push to make Bushi look strong going into the Best of the Super Juniors. And here he eliminates two members of the War Dogs. I think that was a bit of a breath of fresh air for Bushi, who is usually the least protected guy in LIJ, and he's the one getting the job done here against the Dogs. Nice to see that. Freshens him up a little bit, really. After that, though, David Finlay eliminated Bushi by powerbombing him over the top and onto the rest of LIJ, who caught him before he splattered on the ground. Finlay then tried that same thing with Hiromu a little bit later, but Hiromu hooked the top rope while going over. The momentum took Finlay over, and that's how they eliminated Finlay. So not a lot of jobs being done in these matches, which is probably a good thing. Going over the top rope to the floor in a battle royal style elimination, a good way to protect guys taking losses. So that left two guys in with Jake Lee. So that was Hiromu and Tetsuya Naito. And that's how the match came down there. So Jake Lee managed to get rid of Hiromu by giving him the big boot. Of course, that's one of Jake's big moves. He just gets running. He's tall, very long limbs, and he just sticks that foot out and clobbers a guy in the face. And for those of you who are watching and not listening on a podcast, there's a graphic up there now of Lee basically just kicking the head off of Naito. But Naito did not go over the top to the floor. Instead, he managed to get rid of Hiromu Takahashi, but then Naito and Lee battled over the top rope to the apron. Once they were on the apron, Naito managed to sweep his leg, get back in the ring, hit a drop kick, knocked Jake Lee off the apron, and got the victory for the happy ending in Hiroshima. Afterwards, Sly Lee celebrated with the group. This guy in the suit's pretty good. He's a good mascot. He does a good job. Did the whole fist bump. Fans absolutely love this. And afterwards, Naito teased the Mazda Stadium show again. I hope they get to do it. I think that would be a big hit there. So that was the show in Hiroshima, and it was a pretty strong night overall there at the end. I think that the what we had with the King of Pro Wrestling thing, again, that's not going to be to everybody's taste. I think they worked it about as well as they could, but that main event I thought was a pretty good match. So considering it was mostly preview tags, a little bit of a showcase for Bolton, I thought it ended up being a pretty decent night over there. So we will move on from there. There's the little picture of Sly Lee with the LIJ guys celebrating in the ring afterwards. And we will move on after that to Satsuma no Kuni. Now, that was a couple of days later. That show was Monday. And that was in Kagoshima. Now, 1,780 folks there. That was down from last year's show, which did 2,120. So not a real strong crowd on that. It was, again, mostly preview tags until the late matches. So the only thing I really noticed about the early stuff was one of the young lions, Katsuya Murashima, is really bulking up. Like, he physically looks quite different than when he debuted a few months ago. He's getting a lot thicker, and he lost to Oleg Bolton in the opener here. Bolton's getting these wins. Of course, he's one third of the never open weight six man tag team champion. So he's getting victories, but Murashima starting to show some size right there. Shomakato is still fairly small, starting to feel like Murashima has slightly moved ahead of Kato as far as in ring goes. A little bit better wrestler at this stage, but not by much. And Kato's doing fine. They're still very early in their young lion journeys. Their move sets are not expanding quite yet. You know, you're still getting mostly chain wrestling, Boston Crab, body slams, that type of thing. Not a drop kick, not doing a whole lot else. Just not quite ready yet. So that was in the opener there. A bunch of preview tags came up after that. And then the first major match here was a junior heavyweight tag team title match with the Bullet Club War Dogs, that being Connors and Maloney, both of whom were eliminated from that elimination match by Bushi, facing Bushi and Hiromu Takahashi. This ended up going 19 minutes, pretty good. And what you had here was a match between two teams with four guys who very much know what they're doing, but there's a specific story to be told here. So it got very good toward the end. This is where everybody's experience kicked in because the near falls were really good. Hiromu did most of the selling here, and most of the experience is also on the LIJ side. Although Connors has come a long way, Maloney is very good. Bushi and Hiromu have been playing at a high level for a very long time. LIJ survived a lot of big moves as the finished approach. They would either break up the pin or manage to get a shoulder up. Bushi has that new leg hold that he hasn't even really named yet. He's got that new pinning combination that I just mentioned. He's been wrestling with renewed energy. But the War Dogs rallied. And in the end, Maloney hit the drill Aquila on Bushi. And that was when he had Connors rolled up in that pinning combo. So at that point, Maloney just grabbed him up, hoisted him up, drill Aquila. It's pretty impressive how strong, pound for pound, Drill Maloney's just got to be one of the stronger guys out there. He just has no problem just lifting these guys and throwing them around. And he is big for a junior heavyweight. But, man, there is some real strength in that guy's game right there. And Dunson says this tag match was excellent. Yeah, I was very happy with it, too. After he hit that drill Aquila, Connors managed to get the no chaser, his big move on Hiromu, and that set them up for the chance to hit full clip for a definitive win over LIJ. They didn't have to cheat. They didn't have to steal. They just beat him. They have now dispatched Catch 2-2, TJP and Akira. They've beaten the Jet Setters. They've beaten LIJ. The story right now is that they're clearing out that junior heavyweight tag team division. There aren't a lot of steady tag teams in it right now due to departures and changes in factions and various other things. So what they're doing right now, they have a tag team championship team that they like, that are very good heels, that can still have good matches, and they're telling the story that these guys are cleaning out the division for now. With that in mind, we have to look to the future to see maybe a new tag team being that's going to be put together to challenge them. I have a feeling these guys are going to continue on a bit of a rampage, maybe until something new comes in to upend them, because right now they're clearly the class of that division with this victory. And they're the right champions going into the Best of the Super Juniors, though, since their losses in the Super Juniors could determine the next challenger for that championship. So good decision here. I like this one a lot. And the War Dogs ended up getting the victory. As you can see there, they're in the graphic, they are doing the barking. A lot more of that than there used to be. And they are feeling good about themselves as they stand over Bushi there. So a victory for the War Dogs in a good one. The next match after that one, this was the junior heavyweight singles title. This was Sho against Doki. And I have to say, this was exactly the House of Torture interference fest gang warfare they tend to do in these big matches. It was the greatest hits of the ref bumps, the run-ins, the weapons. Just Five guys also came in to try to help Doki, and it looked like they had. It looked like they had managed to run them off. But there was one member of House of Torture that hadn't been out yet, and it was Ren Narita. And when Narita showed up with the push-up bar, you knew Doki was doomed. Ren Narita is going to be challenging John Moxley for the IWGP World Heavyweight title on Saturday. They have to make him look strong, and this was a chance to do that here. They did give Doki a heck of a lot. In fact, I thought maybe he was going to win this thing when he hit Suplex De La Luna on Sho, but Kanemaru grabbed the referee's ankle and pulled him out of the ring. And they had to do a lot to Doki to beat him. He had to be hit with the push-up bar and unmasked. Narita yanked the little mask down off his face. So they treated Doki with a lot of respect and gave him quite a bit. Here's my point about this match. With all the interference, all the weapons, and all the House of Torture shenanigans, the crowd was into it. You can't deny that. Go back and watch this match. Listen to the fans. They are going with every twist and turn of it, into it all the way. And while we've talked a bunch about how this isn't necessarily everybody's cup of tea, this stuff is over with the paying crowd. So while it's not a traditional great match in the way that we normally define a great match within New Japan, that's not really New Japan's only mission, to just put on a series of great matches. It's to entertain the paying fans. And this is different. It's not done in every single match. And yes, we are paying fans also because we pay for NJPW World and we subscribe to it and we watch it from afar. But for the people that go to the arenas, pay money, and sit in those stands, this is currently working when it's done like this, because those people were having a great time watching this one, hoping that Doki could overcome. And then when he didn't, it was for a reason. It was because the next IWGP Championship challenger, Ren Narita, interfered, unmasked him, and clobbered him with a weapon. So Doki came out of this looking like it took all of that to beat him. It didn't really hurt Doki all that much. It sets up an interesting dynamic for Sho going into the Best of Super Juniors, which we're going to be talking about. I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm suddenly this big House of Torture fan and that I love all this stuff. But I would be lying, and I would be a little bit off the mark if I sat here and said this isn't working. It is. And so I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon. So, yeah. And just some other things. In backstage comments, a lot of people are openly questioning the company's direction in backstage comments. A lot of remarks along the lines of how New Japan is being used by AEW, that part-timers are coming in and getting opportunities they don't necessarily deserve, and that the company is being disrespected by those part-timers not being there consistently. These remarks are coming from both babyfaces and heels. It's not just one or the other. And they also don't feel like specific company talking points. So it just sounds like people are really frustrated. It's possible this could be building to something at Forbidden Door. And Dunstan, you asked a question about that. Is there going to be an invasion angle, for instance? I don't know if there's going to be one of those. Logistically, it's possible. I mean, Tony Khan has enough money to do anything. But financially and logistically, it's tricky to fly a bunch of people over for one show to do an invasion and then fly right back. He could. I don't think there's a collision this week, for instance, because of NBA basketball. So it's possible. I wouldn't hold my breath on that necessarily. But there's a real undercurrent of resentment toward outside companies in the comments. And I think some of it is very real. I think they are frustrated that there are a lot of part-timers with title belts right now. But it also could be that they're setting up something big for Forbidden Door that could come into play in the next few weeks, or maybe even partially on Saturday. But, you know, there are a lot of shows between now and Forbidden Door. It just feels like a lot of people are a little bit angry about this. It's just like, geez, we're just getting used by these guys. So that was a real consistent theme that you heard, and not just from heels whining. There were strong baby faces that were questioning the direction of the company in that. And of course, Shota Umino is part of that whole thing. He was one of them, but there were others. There were others out there. Just thought that was intriguing to me. So we'll have to see how that all turns out. And that does lead us to our Pro Wrestling Dontaku preview. And as I get some of these matches up to talk about, I'm going to look at this one. It is two shows, of course, Friday, May 4th, so tomorrow morning here in the U.S., and Saturday, May 4th. It's going to be at the Convention Center in Fukuoka. That's the traditional home of Dontaku. Friday's show will have a series of matches again in the middle that are more preview-ish. But it's Murashima and Togi Makabe against Sho Mikado and Oleg Bolton to lead off on Friday. Takamichi Noku and Doki will face Sho and Yujiro. So that's not a preview, but kind of a post-view tag out there. We've already had the big match in that one. Yuya Uemura and Taichi will face Callum Newman and the Great Okan. Again, that feels more of a continuation of the KOPW thing. ELP, Hikuleo, and Jado will face Kosei Fujita, Shane Haste, and Mikey Nichols. We'll see Bishamon and Tiger Mask against Ishimori, Owens, and Kenta. And that's one last preview before the tag team title match the next night. Naito, Shingo, Hiromu, and Bushi will face Ghetto, Maloney, Connors, and Kid. And that is the last preview before the Never Open Weight match. Then we have an interesting one. John Moxley, El Desperado, and Shota Umino will face Evil, Ren Narita, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru. Now, interesting to see how they do this one, because it could be as simple as Kanemaru taking a pin here, but they might do something to build heat for Saturday. You know, they like to do a little bit of heat on one day, leading to something the next day. This is a good opportunity to do something like that. They're not going to pin Moxley. They really are. They're very careful about when things like that happen. But would they do something to Umino? Could it be something like Umino protects Moxley from something and ends up eating the push-up bar for yet another loss that he has, in which he has taken the bullet for his mentor? Plus, we have the whole dynamic of Moxley and El Desperado. Not too long ago, they had a death match in Corican Hall, but here they are teaming up. So, possibility of some layers here and some clashes. We'll have to see how that one turns out if they are setting something up for Saturday. After that, we have what could be one of the better matches of the weekend. Colin has a comment here. I want to get to this. He says, Gabe Kidd is having the time of his life claiming NJPW doesn't care about its roster. Yeah, you're right. He is. You could almost dismiss that as well. He's Bullet Club. He's a war dog. He hates the company. Of course he does. That's the whole point of this War Dogs version of the Bullet Club, is that they feel deeply disrespected by the company, whereas House of Torture is just rebelling against pro wrestling as a whole and just saying, we don't care about having good matches. We don't care about making you happy. We care nothing about that. You know, we just want to win our matches just out of spite, just to show you that you can do it without giving you what you want. And that's really the House of Torture's presentation. But you could dismiss Gabe Kidd, except there are still a lot of baby faces talking about this stuff, a lot of United Empire members and things and others that are saying very similar things. But we are going to get a TV title match with Zack Sabre Jr. and Jeff Cobb on Friday. My question, was Zack beating Matt Riddle just a way to move it from Riddle to Jeff Cobb without having Cobb and Riddle, frequent teammates, facing off? Cobb could tell interesting stories with that belt, with the idea of beating a man like Jeff Cobb inside of 15 minutes being a very daunting task. So there are stories to tell with Jeff Cobb as the television champion. He's a mountain to climb, and that's always a possible thing. Zach made the TV title his own and made it mean something. And perhaps they just realized their mistake of bringing in Matt Riddle and just decided, let's get it the hell off of him. And they would like to make it Jeff Cobb, but, you know, maybe Cobb and Riddle, not the right matchup. Again, because they team a lot, and they've been telling the story that Riddle is an ally with him. So maybe this is just a transitional thing from Zach to Cobb. And while we are all hoping that Zach is eventually on to bigger and better things, we being me, Jeremy, some of the other guests we've had on this show, we want him to be top gaijin, basically. We think he's ready to carry that mantle. Perhaps there's still some life in the TV title for Zach, though. So this is one that really could go either way. They added a small bet to it that probably won't come into play at the press conference, though. If Cobb beats Zach in under 5 minutes, good luck. Zach has to do his laundry for the entirety of the G1 tour. All right. If Zach beats Cobb in under 5 minutes, Cobb has to buy Zach a bowl of Hakata ramen every day for a year. That's the bet. Hakata ramen's from Fukuoka. Usually means tonkatsu ramen, which is pork bone broth. So I don't know if Zach even eats that stuff, but there you have it. Dunson says Zach doesn't need the title and Cobb needs a big win. And then Colin says Zach Sabre Jr. needs to win the world title ASAP. I kind of agree, guys. This does feel like a chance to get this thing on Cobb. Riddle to Cobb was an awkward thing. They just made a point of saying that these guys are tag team partners and in good shape. And like I said, it might have just been a thing where we're getting rid of Riddle. Whoops, our bad. Never mind him. And then Zach was the guy that could do it. So, yeah, I think this is a real 50-50 possibility. I think the odds here are 50-50. I think Cobb could absolutely win that match and take that championship. So we will have to see how it turns out. But either way, that's going to be a terrific wrestling match. I don't think those two are capable of having a stinker. And I don't think they're going to have one here. I think that's going to be really good. Special singles match here after that. And that is Yota Tsuji and David Finlay. This feels a little bit like it's part of Finlay's rise back up the ranks. We don't know how far he was supposed to go in the New Japan Cup. He had to pull out due to that inner ear issue. We feel like he's headed toward world title contention here soon. You always have to take Yota Tsuji seriously because they have been putting him over in some big situations. But if Tsuji wins, what does that tell us? It really just points toward a title shot for him. And we just saw that. It could be a title shot to somebody else. It could be that perhaps Yota Tsuji wins this match and then challenges, say, the winner of the global title match. Possible. That's very possible. But this feels a little bit more like Finlay running through a Naito ally on the way to a title challenge, to me. The War Dogs have been pretty hot lately, and I just think that this is another notch in Finlay's belt saying, Naito, I beat your boy, now I'm coming for you. But again, don't discount the idea, because they do want Yota, I think, in a prominent spot. I do believe they do want that. So if he manages to pull off what I would consider to be an upset on Finlay, look for him to challenge for some belt, but probably not. You know, Yota Tsuji could challenge. I'm not thinking Moxley. I'm thinking more along the lines of Naito as the champion there. And I know that Moxley has the belt right now, but he's got things to do. So, you know, again, it feels more like Finlay putting him in position to get a shot at that belt down the road. Or maybe it could be something at Dominion too. I mean, so still leaning more toward Finlay moving up the ranks on that one. And it just feels like we're getting him in position to challenge for major championships again. Collins rooting for Tsuji. I don't blame you, it could be. After that, we have one of the matches that I mentioned earlier. We will have Nick Nemeth, the IWGP Global Champion, facing Hiroshi Tanahashi. So this all depends on if Nemeth has another match coming in New Japan. We heard word that this is about it, that he wanted to do the match with Tanahashi, that he was going to get one more match that he could win and then kind of give the title back. It was about basically like a 4 or 5 match deal or a few weekends. It wasn't a long-term thing. And of course, Nemeth's been wrestling in TNA, but that can always be renegotiated. Tana has taken a beating verbally from his own guys for being used, of course. So this could be a bit of a redemption story for him, bringing a title back to New Japan from an outsider. Or if they have Nemeth for more matches, they could leave it on him so they can put it on someone else down the road. All depends on something that has nothing to do with storyline. It just depends on how long Nick Nemeth is going to be working for New Japan. Last we had heard, this was about it, that he was supposed to get that win and over Tanahashi, team with Tanahashi, then lose the belt to somebody else. That all got upended when Tanahashi got hurt. He ended up wrestling Tomohiro Ishii. Now we have the Tanahashi match. So I lean a little bit more toward Tanahashi winning it. But again, you can always make a handshake deal with Nemeth to come back again and wrestle more. And if so, they might leave the global title on him. I mentioned also that he could be challenged by someone else, such as Tsuji, if he were to retain it right there. Colin wants Nemeth to retain. Yeah, the thing is with Tanahashi, he's a very, very smart wrestler. He knows when to do things just physically. He's so beat up that long singles matches can be a bit of a challenge sometimes for him. But Nemeth is very, very good. Tanahashi's very, very smart. I feel like they'll put on something good for us here. So that's the main event of day one of Wrestling Dontaku. On day two, that's Saturday, we will begin with a Frontier Zone match. And that is going to be for some folks from the area here again. One is Jet Way, and the other is Naoki Sakurajima. I'm going to try to get this last name right. It's tricky. Sakurajima. Naoki Sakurajima. And Jet Way facing Togi Makabe and Young Lion Murashima. Way is from the Taiwan group, which is called Puzzle. That's the wrestling group in Taiwan. that when they went over to Taiwan, some of those guys were on the show. There's another one from Puzzle. And Sakurajima has been wrestling for everybody. Good grief. If you look at his wrestling data list, he's been dealing with a lot of Japanese independents. So that's going to be one here. And Colin says, Tana's the president. He can't belt himself. Well, there is a long history, Colin, of people belting themselves in pro wrestling. That is one of the more common themes, as a matter of fact, is as soon as somebody who is an active wrestler slash president slash promoter gets the book, it's funny how gold tends to be sucked onto their waist as if there's some sort of gravitational pull to it. It's it happens a lot. So don't be too surprised right there. Because the one thing about somebody who's either booking or in charge of the company, making themselves the champion, you know you're not leaving. You know, and that was something like, well, why was Vern Gagne always the AWA champion? I'm going way back there, but there are other more recent examples. But you know, why make yourself the champion? Well, you know you're not going to leave. You know you're going to sign your new contract right there. But it's interesting. Yeah, and again, if you make a deal for Nemeth to have one more match and come back and drop it, you can always have him keep it. So, yeah, anyway, we'll get these guys, Frontier Zone matches here from Duntaku Night 2 talked about. Just a couple of local guys there away from the Puzzle Group and Sakurajima. Pardon me. Sakurajima is a veteran of the independent ranks. We'll see Bolton and Shomakato against TMDK. So I would expect Bolton to look very good in this one and probably bulldoze through most of TMDK, but Shomakato is probably going to succumb. Doki and Yuya Uemura will face Akira and Great Okan. So a little bit more of the aftermath of the KOPW stuff. Zack Sabre Jr. and Kosei Fujita will face Jeff Cobb and Callum Newman. One of those guys will be the TV champion there afterwards. Hikuleo, El Fantasma, Shota Umino, and El Desperado against Evil, Yujiro, Sho, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru. If there is no angle involved in this match, Shota should look strong here, considering he's going to be challenging the winner of Narita and Moxley. But will there be any more with Hikuleo seeming a little unhinged? It's very possible, folks, that I read too much into that promo, that he just decided to do a fiery promo that day. I just feel like the timing is interesting on him. That's why I'm keeping an eye on Hikuleo in this one. Tanahashi and Nemeth will team up. This is part of it because this story has always been about how Nick Nemeth doesn't want to destroy Hiroshi Tanahashi. He has so much respect for Tanahashi that he wants to test himself against the ace. That's the story here. So then he wants to team with him. So that makes sense when you're just like, you're my hero. I want to wrestle, or not my hero, but you know, you're a guy I really, really respect. I want to wrestle you badly. And then I want to team with you afterwards. We'll shake hands afterwards, go have a beer, and then we'll be partners. Against Taichi and Taka Michinoku. Good luck, Taka. So we'll see how that one turns out, but I have a feeling that's going to be Taka Michinoku eating another pin there. We'll see more of the War Dogs LIJ stuff. I am not tired of this at all. I know we saw Just Five Guys in LIJ so many times. Jeremy and I started joking about it, saying this is the 950th meeting and all that. But I'm not tired of this stuff. I think the War Dogs and LIJ have a very interesting dynamic to them. And they're just good matchups for one another. They're exciting when they wrestle each other. Also, the LIJ kind of were good bad guys, where bad guys people like, in a way, works well with the War Dogs. That's a nice combo. It'll be Tetsuya Naito, Yoda Tsuji, Hiromu Takahashi, and Bushi facing Connors, Maloney, Finlay, and Ghetto. So tells you a little bit about who might be losing that one. Ghetto is the guy that usually protects the others there. And so, yeah, and then we will have a tag team title match. So we will have Bishamon. These are the current IWGP tag team champions. That's Yoshihashi and Hirooki Goto. And they will be facing Chase Owens and Kenta. And what we're going to get from this one is a rematch of the Bishamon title victory. Bishamon is just about to go on tour with Tamashii over in Oceania. So they have at least a couple of dates. One of them is against Bad Luck Fale and Jack Bonza. And they have another one against another Australian tag team over there. So I have a feeling they'll be going over as the tag team champions. I just don't think they would have those guys headlining two shows right after a big loss. Just doesn't seem to make a whole ton of sense. Plus, Chase Owens and Kenta as the tag team champions was not the strongest group of tag champs they ever had. So I would expect a title retention here. I just don't see much point in going with Chase and Kenta at the moment. Watch me be totally wrong right there. Dunson says this match is boring. And Colin says, I want Kenta to start giving a damn again. It does seem like there's some going through the motions happening there. And he seems to put a lot of energy into his post-match comments, where he will go on and on in his dialogues with the cameraman, some of which is amusing, but none of it seems particularly consequential. So that's one I kind of agree there, that it's been a little while since Kenta felt real relevant, even though they just held the tag team titles not that long ago. It always felt like it was a placeholder. This is one, Bishamon winning those titles back really felt like a course correction. Like somebody in the New Japan office goes, wait a minute, what are we doing? What? Why did we put them on Chase and Kenta? And just put them right back. And now they're going on tour to Australia. I just have a feeling that that's going to be Bishamon retaining right here. So, but maybe they can get a good match out of it. You know, Chase looked really good in their last match there. It's a strong match for Chase Owens. And like I said, Kenta, we have to keep putting him in that category of guys whose body is a little too broken down to be what he was. It's painful because a lot of us remember when Kenta was one of the very best wrestlers on earth. And when he was with Noah, just brilliant. And just too many injuries since then. He can't be what he was. So with that, he's doing a lot of smoke and mirrors in his matches. There's just no question. The next one, we talked about how Jeff Cobb and Zack Sabre Jr. is going to be a great match. The one cannot miss, aside from that one, is the semi-main event on Saturday, and that's Shingo Takagi against Gabe Kidd for the Never Openweight title. I don't see how this is anything but great. Kidd is on the run of his life. He has been brilliant, and it's a fascinating match. What story are they trying to tell us with Kidd? It's very possible that he's on the way to beating Eddie Kingston for the IWGP Strong title, in which case he doesn't necessarily need the Never Openweight title. It's also possible they're setting him up for a run toward the top of the War Dogs food chain. And possibly, as we've mentioned, a little bit of a clash with Finlay, who might perceive him as a threat if he gets a little bit too big for his britches or too successful. Finlay has been unusually open that the War Dogs are there for his benefit and his benefit only, and that could shorten their careers. And it already has shortened Alex Coughlin's, for instance. He said that. He's been saying the quiet part out loud when it comes to those types of things. So a possible story could be that Gabe Kidd gets on such a roll that Finlay cuts him off the knees. Could be. With the Kingston match coming, though, it just feels like this could be a retention for Shingo. Another side here. A loss for Shingo would leave no gold in LIJ, which would be odd for that company. To just have LIJ with no championships going forward. So 60-40 to me with Shingo here. But in the end, this is all about having an absolute war of a match. And who won't love seeing these two mix it all up? It seems on paper to be the match of the weekend. It's the one I'm most looking forward to. And should be an absolute terrific battle on this one. These two very rarely go wrong. So that brings us to the main event of night two of Duntaku. And that's going to be John Moxley defending the IWGP Championship against Ren Narita. So what we have here is a match that is probably going to have a lot of smoke and mirrors, probably going to have a lot of interference and ref bumps. It's going to be a House of Torture match, and it's for the IWGP title. So they are going to be pulling out all the stops. The question here is, how is Moxley going to overcome all this? With a likely match against Shota Umino coming, this seems like a way for Shota to do something heroic to ward off the rest of the House of Torture, leading to Moxley retaining and then having to face his student, Shota Umino. Last time these two teamed up, Umino ended up taking a bullet from Moxley. Something like that could happen here again. I mentioned that they might do something like that for Heat on night one as well. So I believe that there will be help for Moxley. I don't think that Moxley's going to get a lot of offense in on House of Torture. I think there will be a spot where he just starts beating all of them up. But I think in the end, he's going to need a little bit of help. I think that help's going to come from Shota. I think he's going to retain the title. And then at the end, it's Shota and Mox standing there just going, it's going to be us now. It's going to be us at Resurgence. That's just my feeling on it. Also, look out for Finlay to perhaps make his presence known if he beats Tsuji on night one. He might have a lot to do with this, too, as they move towards setting things up with Dominion. So, but I wouldn't expect Finlay to actually interfere in the match. I think that would be some sort of confrontation afterwards, getting involved with Shota and Mox there. So a lot to get through on that one, but I feel like that's going to be the way. Dunstan has a comment here. He says, Ghetto needs to stop being scared and strap Gabe up with both titles. So he wants it to be Gabe Two Belts there. So he's a hell of a wrestler. And I think he's going to get votes for Brawler of the Year, you know, the Bruiser Brody Award and the Observer Awards. Gabe Kidd is on a roll. He seems to work well with everybody. And a brawler like Eddie, it's going to be fabulous. And then a hard-hitting, stiff wrestler like Shingo, it's going to be fabulous. It's just, he seems to mold into other people's wheelhouses really nicely. So, big-time talent. It's what makes me think that at some point they might actually do the whole Finlay Kid thing. He might just be undeniable. And I think that he's getting such good reactions from the fans that the people in the New Japan office are hearing that and just thinking, boy, we might really have something with him. Might be wishful thinking on my part, but they're pushing Kid differently here. And I know that part of it is he lost his partner, Coughlin. But a lot of times when a tag team wrestler loses his tag team partner, he becomes the low guy on that totem pole. Instead, it's just been the opposite. He feels like a bigger deal than Finlay right now. It's like they need to do more with Finlay to get him there than they would need to do with Kid. It's an interesting situation right there, and one that might end up coming to a head in the storyline. So with that in mind, that's Duntaku. Again, that's Friday, and that is Saturday. And not long after that, we also have the All Together show. So just a lot going on right here. Let's go over that All Together thing here in just a moment. That is Monday, May 6th, and that's going to be on an Abema pay-per-view. So not going to be on NJPW World right there. This is going to be a different thing. It's to benefit the Noto earthquake victims from the earthquake that hit Japan on January 1st. And, of course, this is the combined show, so a lot of different organizations involved in this one. We'll look at some of these matches. The first one is actually kind of intriguing. It's the NOAH president, Naomichi Marufuji, Sanshiro Takagi, who's, I believe, Dragon Gate president, and Hiroshi Tanahashi, the president of New Japan. They'll be taking on the House of Torture crew of Yujiro Takahashi, Ren Narita, and Evil. So we have the presidents against the bad guys there. I'd imagine that'll be the good guys winning in the end. Interesting singles match with Kenno from NOAH going up against Kosei Fujita. Third match, also interesting. It's a Stardom match. Natsupoi teaming with Starlight Kid. As most of you watching this probably know, Starlight Kid was thrown out of the heel Oedo Tai faction. They turned on her at All-Star Grand Queendom, and she has been taken in provisionally by the Cosmic Angels. She's teaming here with Natsupoi against Miyu Amasaki and Azumi from the Queen's Quest group. So after that, we have the hard-hitting match. That's Tomohiro Ishii teaming with Daisuke Sekimoto against Masa Kitamiya, who is the NOAH version of Ishii, and Jeff Cobb. So this is just the big bruisers. Four big bruisers just going to knock the hell out of each other for a little while. The fifth match is a real mixed bag of guys here from all different companies. We have Kota Minura, Mao, Ninja Mac, Hayata, El Desperado. So just about everybody is represented on that side, facing some counterparts. So Hiromu Takahashi, Dragon Bane, Alpha Wolf. So you got NOAH, And then you have Tetsuya Endo, Yamato. So you got New Japan, All Japan, several different promotions involved there. Taichi was going to be teaming with Kai was going to be teaming with Sanada. That's now Taichi. Sanada is out hurt against Chris Brooks and Zack Sabre Jr. After that, seventh match, Yota Tsuji, Shingo Takagi, and Tetsuya Naito. So you got LIJ going up against the War Dogs, Finlay, Jake Lee, and Gabe Kidd. So we bring back Jake Lee for that. And so we'll see if we are leading to some kind of a singles match with Naito and Lee. It seems like that's going to have to happen eventually. Six-man match here at All Together. And then finally, the eighth match is Shun Skywalker, Konosuke Takeshita. So somebody that's been on AEW TV a lot, teaming with Yuya Uemura. So Skywalker, Takeshita, and Uemura against Yuki Ueno, Kato Kiyomiya, and Shota Umino. So that's an intriguing one right there. Again, a lot of these don't necessarily feel like canon. It just feels like some neat matches that we're going to have. I don't know if there's going to be a ton of story coming out of this one. We're going to keep an eye on it. They could always run angles for it. So, you never know. They might do something big with it, or this could be just a collection of, hey, these are going to be some really good matches with some interesting combinations you don't usually get. It's a charity thing, so it might not be the biggest deal. So how, and Colin's asking, how do you go about buying this show if it's on Abema? There, you can go to the All Together page on the New Japan 1972 website. There's a preview of All Together again, and on that page, they have a link to get it in different regions. There are regions for, I believe, North America, another one for a different one for Japan, not the same one. And so go to NJPW 1972, find some of the news articles under the news section about All Together, and they will give you links to that show depending on where you are in the world. There are several there. And Abima will be available that way. And I didn't see a price on it, though, so I'm not sure how much it's going to be. I meant to look that up before the show, and then I got sidetracked. So I don't know how much the pay-per-view is costing right now, but that's for Monday. So, yeah, what else do we have? The Super Junior. Yes, I do remember, Colin, that you are in the UK, so there might be a different link, but there are several links up there for that. There are several different ones that go to different regions. So it does look like they had just about everybody covered when I was last on there. So best of the Super Junior blocks have been announced. Now, we've had some lineup changes, unfortunately. So Yo, of course, injured his shoulder, and he's out for a while. So Kushida stepping into that place. Basically think that he would be plug and play to me, in that you don't have to change a ton of booking for Kushida. Matches that Yo would win, Kushida could win. Matches that Yo might lose, Kushida could probably lose those too. So not a ton needs to be done there. They also, unfortunately, had to replace Ryusuke Taguchi. And that is a real disappointing thing. He was hurt in a bicycle accident, and hurt bad enough that he's going to miss this tour. Dragon Dia from Dragon Gate will be filling in for him, though. So we hope that both Yo and Taguchi, and Sanada for that matter, all recover very quickly and get back into the ring very soon. But unfortunately, yeah, Taguchi, pretty serious bike accident there. Got hit while on his bicycle. So we'll have to see how long he is out. But Dragon Dia will be filling his spot. So with that in mind, let's take a look at these Super Junior blocks. And here, I'll just read them off to you. And so in Block A, that's Desperado, Kevin Knight, Bushi, Titan from CMLL, TJP, Kosei Fujita, Blake Christian. I'm looking forward to seeing him in the ring there in New Japan. Clark Connors, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, and Hayata. Hayata being the NOAH representative. So this one did not have any of those substitutions I just talked about, and it seems pretty straightforward. This is one block where it feels to me like Desperado and TJP are the clear favorites here. And, of course, one of the real clues is the final night of the block action, because for dramatic purposes, you want the people that are in the mix to be in key matches or facing each other. So the last night of the tour often gives you an insight as to who might be going on to the semifinals and finals. So each block will have a winner and a second place finisher. So both of those will advance to the semis, and then the finals will be at Dominion. So two guys from each block move on. Final night has Desperado facing Hayata from NOAH, and TJP is wrestling Titan. He was a member of LIJ and, of course, the CMLL rep. The other matches are Fujita versus Christian, Clark Connors versus Yoshinobu Kanemaru, which just has the War Dogs versus House of Torture dynamic to it as to who's gonna sink the lowest in order to get the victory. And the other one is Bushi and Kevin Knight. Each of those matches, the ones I just read there, has someone that I don't think will be a big part of the finals or the semifinals, which makes it feel like Desperado Hayata and TJP Titan will clear things up. I think Desperado and TJP are moving on there, with maybe TJP having to beat Titan to get over the hump, so to speak, and, you know, clear that last hurdle. That's the way that I read Block A at this point. That my prediction, Desperado and TJP. And we'll talk more about this, of course, next week with when we come back. For the other side of it, B Block, much more wide open. Much more wide open. And I'll see if I can bring a graphic up here that'll show these guys a little bit better for you, for those of you who are watching there. And there's the, let me bring it up. So the A Block, again, that's one that... it's going to process for a while. All right. Point is, the B block just feels a little bit more wide open. The A block, there we go. Right there, we got it. We can get a better look at them there. It just really feels like Desperado and TJP. So as we go to Block B, though, this one, I think we're going to be seeing one of those situations where there are six guys in contention for those two spots on the last day. And we'll get to you guys' picks here in just a little bit. But this B block, to me, is going to have a lot of ups and downs. So we have Kushida, Dragon Dia, Doki, Robbie Eagles, not to be discounted either, Francesco Akira, I think there are plans for him, Sho, Hiromu Takahashi, Taiji Ishimori, Ninja Mac from NOAH, and Drilla Maloney. Hiromu and Ishimori are facing each other on the very last day. So here are the final day matchups. Kushida against Dragon Dia. That one feels like it probably won't have to do with the final bit. Maloney and Ninja Mac. Could be the same thing, although they did just have Maloney go over Naito. That's not to be discounted either. Doki and Robbie Eagles feels consequential. Francesco Akira versus Sho feels very consequential on the last night of block action. And then one of the highlights of the entire tournament, Hiromu Takahashi and Taiji Ishimori, happening on that very last day. And Colin might have just gotten some bad news here. This is on the Altogether ordering page, and it's telling me it's not available in the UK. Oh, man. I hope there's a way you can get that somehow there, but that's a bummer if it's not available there. So looking at this, Sho, the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion, is in this block, but he doesn't have to be a strong champion. His meaning that his whole thing can be that he is a weak champion. And the story can be that if a guy just gets one clean shot at him, that he can be beaten. But you never quite get that one clean shot because House of Torture are always there constantly interfering and jumping in and cheating. So that's the whole psychology of him. So this could be, facing Akira on the final day, that Akira beats him to take him out of the semis. Although they could put him in the semis. He's not going to win the tournament because this is all about creating a challenger. They could put him in the semis, but it could also be that Akira beats him to take him out of it, thus setting up Akira as a possible challenge afterwards, and that could build more than one future challenger. Nothing at all wrong with that. Akira needs a little bit of something because indications are that while TJP is in this tournament, and I expect him to do well in this tournament, the indication is that TJP isn't long for Catch 2-2. They've made some comments that maybe Catch 2-2, you know, like TJP might be doing more than just wrestling with Akira, might be going after singles titles, might be going into the G1, for instance. They need something for Akira. Akira is wildly talented, really good wrestler. And I think he would be an excellent guy that could make a run at the junior heavyweight title. I don't know if he would be the champion. Doesn't need to be yet. but I feel like a singles push for Akira would be a smart idea, and you can do things like that here. Robbie Eagles usually does pretty well in these tournaments. Pardon me just a moment. I usually choke at least once a show, so there it is. Eagles usually does fairly well in these tournaments. And Doki is on an upswing as well. So I would think that the Doki-Robbie Eagles match will have some kind of consequence toward who makes the semifinals and the finals. Hiromu and Ishimori will almost certainly have a spot in the playoffs on the line. Those two are heavily protected in tournaments like this. Certainly Hiromu, and Ishimori is one of the better workers in that whole division. Although you forget about it because, you know, they haven't done a lot with him, and he's been lost in the shuffle. He's not a war dog necessarily. He's not House of Torture. So Ishimori is just kind of part of the old school Bullet Club out there. I've been saying he needs a new coat of paint and a change of scenery there for a little while, but neither here nor there. Once he's in the Super Junior tournament, he'll have some of the best matches out there. So I can also imagine having Francesco Akira advance to the semifinals so that he could face TJP. That would be a nice little semifinal match in there. I wouldn't mind seeing it. The finals are at Dominion. So it's not on the finalists of this tournament to draw the house like it is often, where the Super Junior finals are the main event of another show leading to Dominion. That allows a little more wiggle room than usual. The finalists don't have to draw the Dominion house. So we'll have to see where this goes, of course, but show shouldn't win. I can see Desperado finally getting his Super Junior victory here. And I can also see perhaps something along the lines of pushing TJP's narrative that he's the real captain and getting him in there. A lot of ways that thing could go, but I think Block B is going to be a real interesting thing, whereas Block A probably a little bit more straightforward. But my early picks, this is just me reading tea leaves, Desperado, TJP, Akira, and Hiromu in the semifinals. That's just my thought there. So we'll see how close I am as it moves on. And let's see what else we have here for Super Juniors. I didn't change my tag. I still have the wrong banner up there. After that, what else do we have to talk about? I did want to look at the history of the Pro Wrestling Dontaku show here. We have a little bit of time. It's an interesting one. You know, Dontaku is a show that has always been in Fukuoka. That has been the one thing. It's Fukuoka's big show, same way that Dominion is traditionally an Osaka show. And of course, many others are Tokyo based, but this has been Fukuoka's event. It started off as an absolute, unequivocal supercard. It began in 1993, and it was a one night event. It was held in the Fukuoka Dome Stadium. So that's baseball stadium there, which is a domed park. There are a lot of domes in Japanese baseball, partially because baseball season tends to go through the rainy season also in Japan. So got to have a way to protect from the rainouts and things. 55,000 people were at the very first Wrestling Dontaku in 1993. It was headlined by Antonio Inoki and Tetsumi Fujinami against Tenryu and Riki Choshu. So there were a lot of subtext to that match. Tenryu and Choshu were rivals in All Japan. They had a monster feud that was among the very first real Japanese versus Japanese blood feuds, so to speak. Plus, Choshu had been one of the very few big stars to bounce back and forth from New Japan to All Japan and back again. So a lot of subtext with that one. Inoki and Fujinami won that one by submission. It was a cobra twist from Fujinami on Tenryu. Other matches, by the way, on that night, very first Dontaku, Hulk Hogan versus the Great Muta. Hogan won, of course. Scott Norton and Sting had a no contest. And if you look at that time, 1993, May of 1993, that's just after, I believe, Hogan lost the title to Yokozuna at King of the Ring. Yeah, somewhere there. Wasn't that in 1993? I believe it was. So very shortly after leaving the WWF, he was here in New Japan wrestling Great Muta. Scott Norton and Sting wrestled to a no contest on that show. They drew over 50,000 just about every year there in the early days. 1994, it was Inoki versus the Great Muta. That was part of Inoki's countdown to the retirement match. Interesting match in the opener of that one, the Young Lion match, was Satoshi Kojima and Yuji Nagata wrestling each other. So imagine Kojima and Nagata, two of the people that are really helping a lot of the younger guys along now. They were the younger guys back then. 1995, Shinya Hashimoto defended the title against Keiji Muto. Muto won the championship here. And the Steiners, Ric Flair, and Terry Funk were all on that card. So these were big shows in full baseball stadiums. The early and mid-90s in New Japan was a big, big time run for that company historically. They were doing basically quarterly shows in stadiums. Sometimes four a year, you know, that obviously the January 4th show, this was before it was called Wrestle Kingdom, but it was still on January 4th. You had this Dontaku show. There were just all kinds of, and they would do another show in Tokyo in the summertime at the Tokyo Dome. They were just on fire back then. It went away for a few years as that kind of died down. In 2000, it came back, but the crowds were in the 25,000 range instead of the 50,000 range. The year 2000 had Kensuke Sasaki against Keiji Muto for the IJWGP title. Interesting note here, Togi Makabe lost to Kenzo Suzuki in the finals of the Young Lions Cup. I can't even imagine Togi Makabe as a young lion, but he was in the year 2000 in the Young Lion Cup finals. So they had the event again in 2001, and it drew about the same, but then it went away again until 2009. They revived the event in 2009. Since then, it's been in arenas in Fukuoka and not in the dome, with one exception that we'll talk about. 6,000 would be considered a really strong Dontaku crowd. It's been both one night and two night events over the years. That there doesn't seem to be a real pattern to that. It's just however they're feeling like doing. They had and it's usually headlined by an IWGP title match. In 2022, they did have another show back in the dome. They put it there and drew 8,000 for Okada versus Naito for the title. That was, while they drew 8,000 people there, it was still 8,000 people in a baseball stadium. So sometimes it didn't really feel like it was an enormous crowd. Last year, for instance, they had 4,489 for Sonata versus Hiromu Takahashi. So that was a one-night Dontaku. This year, it's two nights. And some notable past Dontakus, and we're going to run through these real quick, and then I'm going to get some questions that have been sent in. So notable past Dontakus include 2010, Togi Makabe beat Shinsuke Nakamura for the IWGP title at Pro Wrestling Dontaku. Some storyline stuff in 2011 that still affects us today. In 2011, Yujiro Takahashi walked out on Tetsuya Naito and broke up the No Limit tag team that they had going for quite a while. So that was Yujiro leaving and going heel to go to Chaos, back when Chaos were the bad guys and all this. Taichi and Takemichi Noku turned on Satoshi Kojima at that show. And when Minoru Suzuki made a surprise return, they formed Suzuki Goon. So Dontaku was a part of Suzuki Goon history there. Also, in 2014, Yujiro. You cannot trust Yujiro in Fukuoka. Here's why. 2014, only 3 years later, he turned on Chaos and Kazuchika Okada. And he helped AJ Styles win the IWGP championship. So AJ Styles won his championship here at Dontaku in Fukuoka. There was not a show in 2020 due to the pandemic, of course, but it's been part of the calendar since. And this is the first two-nighter since 2021. So it's been a few years since they did a two-night Dontaku. And that one had restrictions on the crowd. It was still during the pandemic, and Japan still had things tight. So it drew 2,211 and 2,367 in consecutive nights. It featured really good matches on top. Tanahashi wrestled Jay White for the Never Openweight title on night one. And an incredible match saw Will Ospreay and Shingo Takagi for the IWGP title on night two. One of the better matches of that year, and one of the better IWGP world title matches. So that's a little bit of Dontaku history. It's been around the beginning of May and, you know, around Golden Week. It fits in around around Golden Week, which is a big holiday in Japan. Let's get to some of these questions. I do want to get to some of these. So I'm going to bring them back up here. And Dunstan just threw in a few before we started the show. I said, what are my expectations for Duntaku? Shingo and Gabe stand out as a great match. I think that the first half of each night will be rather pedestrian. They'll probably be well wrestled, but I don't expect a whole lot to come out of some of those preview tags, or they're almost post-view tags, you know, considering some of those matches that took place in Hiroshima and at Satsuma no Kuni. So some of those I think will be, like I said, good matches, but nothing crazy. But I think there's some strong stuff. Like I said, the never openweight title match is a can't miss. The TV title match is a can't miss. I bet they do something fairly elaborate for the world title match. So I think there'll be some interesting talking points there. And of course, I really do think that the TV title match and the global title match, the never openweight title match, you could make a case for a title change or a retention. So I think there is some tension there. It's not an obvious result in any of those matches. I know which way I'm leaning on those, but you can make a case either way. So there you go. He's asking, will there be any surprises? Something with Hikuleo perhaps. And you know, you never know. You mentioned that could there be an invasion angle? And I said, no, maybe not, but I could see something coming up, for instance, on the big screen. We got to set up Dominion. We got to set up Forbidden Door not too far in the future. So look out if anybody is about to leave the ring and the lights go down and the famous the video screen starts playing. Could be a good time for some kind of long distance challenge, if not a live thing. He also asked about Tana as president. Has he really changed anything? Could be some course corrections and things like some of the tag, like the tag team titles, or maybe he's the one that changed his mind about Matt Riddle. I think with Tanahashi as president, it'll take a while for things to really become apparent. He can't just change the schedule, which is something that he mentioned at some point, because they have to book their shows out so far in the future that even though he took over at the end of 2023, they had 2024 booked through Corken Hall until 2025. So there's only so much he can do there. I do think he is working on bringing in different talent. I think the Jake Lee thing is an interesting one. So what has he changed? I think he's playing well with others. I think this whole thing with incorporating a little bit more stardom into things, incorporating Noah, incorporating Dragon Gate. You know, he managed to get some Dragon Gate talent for BOSJ. And for instance, I think having Dragon Dia in there is probably a nice thing where you could have just plugged Tiger Mask in. So overall, I think there might be some things like that, but it's going to take a while. This has a lot of momentum going forward. A lot of things are planned out way in advance. So I think it's going to take a while before he's able to fully put his stamp on it. And he also asked, do I expect more AEW versus New Japan? Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think that might be the theme of the Forbidden Door, more than just little pockets of matches where both companies are on the show. I think there's going to be an AEW versus New Japan element on it. It just seems to be going that way, even with the women, because the one match that we feel pretty confident we're going to get is Toni Storm against Mina Shirakawa. They set that up over WrestleMania weekend. So that's a little bit of a New Japan owned company against AEW. And I think that that's going to be more of it. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Let's see. Who would face Mox at Dominion? We're expecting, of course, Mox to face Shota Umino at Resurgence. After that, I could see Finlay coming. I could absolutely see David Finlay coming up at Dominion after that. I think that could be the direction they go. That's one. If Mox is still the champion, they could go with Yota Tsuji again, but Dominion might be his event. But to have him go and lose at Dominion again doesn't feel quite right. I'd have to think about that one, how that one would go. Again, we're still talking about whoever comes out of Dominion, you're getting very close, not all the way there. You're getting very close to G1. And then you kind of have to lock in who's going to be your champion for quite a while. So it's an interesting thing. If they start moving back toward Moxley versus Naito, that'll tell us a little bit of something. Well, we're going to find out a lot more at Resurgence and here at Duntaku. Also asked, Is Stardom and New Japan going to merge their streaming services? God, I would love that. I would love that so much. I hope it does happen someday, because God knows Stardom World needs a complete and utter overhaul. It's challenging, though, because one thing is Stardom and New Japan have different deals with broadcasters. So you are talking about different companies involved with that footage and the production and things. So it's not as easy as just saying, well, now we bought Stardom, we're going to take all that stuff and bring it in. Unfortunately, there are TV networks to deal with, because New Japan, of course, works with Asahi and with Abima. Stardom works with other people at times in there. So just putting all that footage together can be tricky, putting those two streaming services together. Although I do expect that someday there'll be a little bit more uniformity in there. I think that one will look like the other. Good Lord, I hope that, even though New Japan World has its faults, that if Stardom World looked more like New Japan World, it would be a better product. It would just be a better product. So I'm hoping something like that. What I'm really hoping for is that they have it so you subscribe to one, you can bundle it with the other, and maybe get a couple of bucks off a month. That would make me really happy, actually, if they can get to that someday, too. So, yeah, and Colin, yeah, I'm very sorry that that Altogether show doesn't seem to be available in the UK. That does suck. I hope there is a way around the back end that you can find a way to see it. It would be a shame if they missed out on that opportunity. Yeah, and I agree with you that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I hope you're able to find a way through it. So, with that in mind, I think we've answered all the questions. I think we've looked at all the shows that are coming up this week. I hope you watch and enjoy Pro Wrestling Dontaku. Thank you for putting up with me doing the show by myself this week. Hopefully we'll have Jeremy back next time. So with that in mind, don't forget our sibling show, Power Bombshells, will be back on Sunday at 1 p.m. As always, 1 p.m. Eastern there. That's Sam and Mel, bringing you their important points about the wrestling business. We have the Dynamite Show. So make sure you check us out here. Like, subscribe. Of course, if you look at the podcast feed, you also get The Wrap. You get Garrett's show. There's just a ton of things. Boom. There's just so much good stuff out there. You can't watch it all. It's impossible. It's a wonderful problem to have. There's so much good wrestling. But Fight Game Media can help you keep track of all of it. So make sure you look here on our YouTube feed. Look on the podcast feed. Don't forget about our podcast feed, too. Make sure you rate us, leave us a review. It really does help people find the show. Colin mentions that both of those sites, NJPW World and Stardom World, would have to dramatically improve if they were to merge. I hope that would be the case. Yeah, I won't lie. It's been disappointing. NJPW World and Stardom World has always been kind of a headache. So they could use a good upgrade. And perhaps once some of these contracts expire and they're able to put these companies a little bit together even more, they are put those companies together in a more complete way, perhaps that's one of the things they can really focus on. Is we have two different streaming services, both of which have their issues. Put a team on it, come up with something that's a little bit more coherent, a little smoother user experience, and perhaps a bundle. And I think that they could actually do some real good business with that. Next week on Speaking of Strong Style, we're going to wrap things up here today. We will be previewing the Resurgence Show from Ontario, California. We'll be breaking down Dontaku. We'll be talking about what happened at All Together. Of course, Resurgence is coming up a week from Saturday. It's coming up right upon us. So that title match on Saturday leading to another one the following Saturday. And it's also the same day that the Super Juniors kick off. So we'll have the full preview of that one. Going to be a lot to talk about, a lot to review, a lot to preview. So make sure you join us as we take a closer look at Best of Super Juniors, Resurgence, and Dontaku next week. With that in mind, thank you very much for watching me today. Appreciate you again putting up with me doing the show solo. Hopefully we will be back with Jeremy next week. But for now, I'm Stephen Conway. This has been Speaking of Strong Style. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And we will talk to you again very soon.